puis mais m'asseoir ici, te dire que mon intention d'échanger P.K. Subban, Carey Price, Gal Chenya, Gallagher, non.
Well, I'm flattered to be in the same breath as Wayne Gretzky. I truly am. I have, like, you know, for people, I'm just like, wow. You know, I've had the pleasure of having dinner with Wayne a couple times, and obviously he's the greatest player, one of the greatest players to ever play the game. So for anybody to refer to Wayne or myself in the same sentence, it's a compliment.
At the beginning, I'll say I try to protect Alex. I didn't want to put him in a new position and have to play against Weber. I have to play always against top players. You know, I try to protect him as most as I can.
There's not much I can say on that. And at the end of the day, I gotta come to the rink, and I know what to expect from myself and the things I need to do when I'm on the ice. And you know, I am at the end of the day, I'm just a player. You know, I gotta come in and show up and ready to play.
To move any of these guys, and you're going to PK, it would have to be something very special. And as a hockey man, I'm going to have to look at all my options. But is that reality? Probably not. But if I don't look at all my options, like any other players, I'm not doing my job as a general manager.
Welcome back. Here we are, hour number 4 on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. I think Michael will appreciate this. I'm not comparing. This is how my mind works. Watching Jeff Molson and Mark Bergeron and Michel Therrien, at one point I flash back to a John Robertson column. Now, Robertson had just published a book called Rusty Staub of the Montreal Expos, and in the spring of 1972, he was covering the Canadiens in the playoffs, and he was in Boston, and Rusty Staub was traded to the New York Mets for Ken Singleton, Tim Foley, and Mike Jorgensen. And I do believe John Robertson's lead in his column the next morning was, "I'm glad I wasn't in New York announcing to hear the Expos announce the Staub trade, because the performance by the three Musketeers, John McHale, Jim Fanning, and Gene Mauch, would have had me throwing up on the rug." Michael Farber is with us every Monday at this time. How you doing?
And I can't top that. So John Robertson once wrote a column about Dick Williams, and his lead was, "Here lies Dick Williams." Dick Williams hadn't told him the truth about something. Well, I'm not nearly as clever as John Robertson, but on Twitter today, I said with the Montreal Canadiens status, I'd like you to meet Quo. And that's essentially what we've had there, although Craig Ramsey will no longer be part of the mix. Sylvain Lefebvre, after missing the playoffs 4 straight years in Hamilton and now St. John's, he'll be back as well. So full speed ahead, and let's hope they aren't running into the iceberg.
Well, what do you, beyond that, what do you think their biggest, like, is there somebody, anything that you saw or heard or read today go above and beyond what you expected one way or the other?
Yeah, and I think, again, we're parsing the language, but I have no intention of trading P.K. Subban is not the same as I'm not trading P.K. Subban. I mean, there's a window there, and we all know about July 1 and the no trade kicking in, the full no trade. So Bergevin left himself a little bit of room there in case he wants to make that kind of deal. You know, we talk about scoring and how difficult it is to acquire, and you have to draft and develop. And I went through the top 35 scorers in the National Hockey League this year, and unless I miss somebody, 8 of them have been traded in their careers. And let's not just talk about Wayne Gretzky. I mean, Joe Thornton had a fabulous year in San Jose, traded, Blake Wheeler traded, Brent Burns traded, Tyler Seguin, we all know about him, Philip Forsberg traded, Louis Erickson traded, Jason Spezza traded, Jeff Carter traded a bunch of times. So for someone to say, oh, it's really hard to make that kind of trade for elite scoring, well, it's out there. You have to be good, and you have to be a little bit lucky, and you maybe have to get in on it early, but it's there. So I don't want to hear anyone whine about how tough it is to make a trade.
And I think among those 35 top scorers, I don't think you'll find a member of the Canadiens, right?
Oh, Pacioretty.
Oh, he did make it into the top 35?
Yeah, Pacioretty okay. was, I believe, number 25.
Okay.
I don't have the list in front of me, but yeah. And he was drafted, I guess, 8th overall by Montreal. And yeah, ideally that's what you're going to do. But Blake Wheeler was a good young player who was moved early in his career. In fact, traded twice because originally it was the Coyotes who had his rights, moved to Boston. Now he's in Winnipeg. Philip Forsberg, a really bright young player in Nashville, traded. I mean, you know, this kind of thing happens. So you have to be good. And I can't remember the Canadiens winning a trade of this magnitude for a long time.
Now, generally, Marc Bergevin has been an incrementalist, and you can point to the Vanek trade, but I would counter with the Vanek trade. The return was so low going the other way that it was a move that he had to make, and he did, and kudos to him. But outside of that, fairly conservative. Is he going to have to shed his skin and be more aggressive, generally speaking, whether it's to acquire something on offense or to shake things up a little bit more, Michael?
Well, I think he is pretty aggressive. I'll take issue with you, Rod. I don't think he's made the big home run pitch. And, of course, Vanek was strictly going to be a rental. Everyone knew he was going to end up in Minnesota, and he was going to be the ultimate short-timer in Montreal. But he's moved pieces around. He's picked up guys. He hasn't been static. Has he swung and missed a lot of times? Yeah. Did he land somebody in Byron? I suppose so, if you're into fourth liners and really good penalty killers. But he hasn't made that signature trade like Dallas made to get a Sagan, giving up a pretty good player in Louis Erickson. But he hasn't made that kind of difference-making deal.
Yeah, he's been active. He's got to aim a lot higher. That's basically what he's got to do. He's got to do, we pointed this out early in the show, with Washington, and they've been incredibly healthy. There's another factor with Washington this season. Their top players have played almost every game. He's got to do what McClellan did in the offseason a year ago, landing Justin Williams and TJ Oshie.
Those are two great names. One, Williams, Mr. Game 7, Cups in Carolina and L.A., this is a franchise that in Ovechkin's time has won 3 of 9 game sevens. This is why you want Justin Williams. And Oshie, there was a perfect spot for him with Backstrom and Ovechkin. So these were not stabs in the dark on a guy like Semin. Well, Carolina's sick of the sight of him, and maybe he'll regain something here, and we're not spending a lot, so it's a good move. And that's just a stab in the dark. But clearly, Oshie was going to slot in somewhere, and Justin Williams was going to help out a team that, if it doesn't win a Stanley Cup this year, you wonder if it ever will. But he's been a valuable contributor there, and I expect him to be that throughout the playoffs.
All right, we've spent 3 hours and 15 minutes discussing the Canadiens, and we'll return to the Canadiens again and again and again and again. The NHL playoffs start Wednesday. The Flyers get in. They earn their way in. The Bruins, that's another story. But the Flyers get in, and Ed Snyder passes away the day after they clinch a playoff spot. When I say Ed Snyder, what do you think of?
I think of Game 6, 1999, first round in new rink in Philadelphia. Sergei Berezin scored for Toronto when the Leafs won 1-0 and eliminated the Flyers. Our old friend John LeClair had been called for elbowing by Terry Gregson, and it was a very soft call, I thought, especially at that time of the game, and especially at that time in the National Hockey League, where soft calls weren't going to be made, certainly in 0-0 games late in the third period. Snyder went crazy in the dressing room. He went and ranted and called Terry Gregson the worst possible name you could call an official. He called him a homer. And he says, I bet this guy is from Toronto. So I actually slipped out and went back and checked. And sure enough, Gregson was from Aurora, Ontario, which is just north of Toronto. And I came back into the room, and Snyder was still going on. And I said, yeah, oh, by the way, Terry Gregson is from suburban Toronto. And he went off again. Ed Snyder was a passionate guy. He was not afraid of much of anything. Players who played for him absolutely adored him, and I cite Fred Shiro's Hall of Fame induction. I think 18 of the players were there from the Broad Street Bully teams in the mid-70s, and that's what the Flyers did. They stuck together, and Snyder stuck up for them. And I think he is the longest-serving owner in sports, certainly in North America. Now, the Rooney family, he's owned the Pittsburgh Steelers for a long time, and the Maras, you know, the New York Giants, and there have been families. It's been passed down, but Ed Snyder founded this 1967 expansion team and was the guy. And he was quite philanthropic in the Philadelphia area. He was also very instrumental, and not a lot of people know this, about helping resettle some of the Russian Jews who came over, very supportive of that. He was a fascinating guy and one of the real power brokers in the game.
Finishing up with Michael Farber, award-winning writer and broadcaster, with us every Monday after 6 on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.
Now back over the ball, his third shot from the drop zone after finding Ray's Creek. Jordan Spieth, the leader for the moment. The third shot punched into Ray's Creek again. He took a huge chunk of Augusta Real Estate, and the ball goes into the creek once more. This for quadruple bogey at hole number 12. He's 6 feet away. Spieth trying to settle in, and he pumps it home. My goodness, what a change we have at Augusta National. A 7 on hole number 12 for Jordan Spieth.
Just not in the face, if you guys don't mind, please. Just not right now in the face.
Well, count me among the idiots who walked away from the Masters for 20 minutes and I missed the tournament. Honest to God.
You missed one of the two worst holes in major championship golf that I can recall. That and Jean Vandeveld's 17th at the British Open a few years ago, where he made a meal of that hole, and I believe it ended up being a triple. This was stunning. And the bad first shot, the 9-iron that he probably should have hooked a little bit instead of trying to fade in, but then the next shot, I mean, it barely reached Ray's Creek. That ball was hit so fat it practically waddled into the water, and it almost looked like he was laying up. Oh, I'll just lay up short on this 80-yard shot and then get it over the creek on the next one. It was a shot that I could hit, and in fact have hit, and many times. It was absolutely stunning. Spieth is a terrific player, but he hits a ton of squirrely shots. His short game generally saves him. If you look at the great ball strikers, Rory McIlroy would be the closest to what Tiger Woods did tee to green. He is more powerful and creative and can do some great stuff. Spieth doesn't have that. He has to do some other things. And he just didn't seem capable of closing it. And people bring up the Norman Faldo thing. To me, it was more similar to what McIlroy did in 2011, when McIlroy was 21, Spieth's now 22. And on the 10th hole, he hooked a drive at Augusta into a place that I didn't even know existed, ended up taking triple. And in fact, ended up on that hole four putting for a double bogey. So we saw the same thing there. And if you look at McIlroy play Augusta now, he looks a little spooked. And you wonder if Spieth in the future will be spooked as well. He really has to go back and conquer that course once again.
So incredible because, as you know, he was trying to become the first man ever to win wire-to-wire at Augusta 2 years in a row. He seemed to be in control, although, as you say, he wasn't great off the tee, especially pick a few holes there in his final round. But was crazy, TSN had Mike Weir working for them, right, Mike? And Mike Weir, we know, he won in 03. And then it goes into the CBS coverage. They had Nick Faldo working for them, along with Jim Nantz. And it was right. It was fascinating watching Nick Faldo talk about everything that's going on as Danny Willett realizes that all of a sudden he goes from trailing by 3 strokes to leading by 2 or 3 strokes.
Yeah, I mean, that what we saw in 96, though, that day that Faldo shot a 67 and Greg Norman essentially imploded. But Norman was a seasoned guy at that point. I mean, he'd been around, and that's why I think the McIlroy analogy might be even more apt than this one. Certainly, when we saw the kinds of things and the heartbreak that Dustin Johnson, we had Greg Norman at the U.S. Open last year as the guy doing the commentary, and it's all fascinating. But it's the nature of golf. It will break your heart like no other sport, and after it does, it will laugh at you. And that's golf, and that's why I respect it, and sometimes I love it.
Second happiest golfer on the planet yesterday after the conclusion of the Masters was Ernie Els. Thanks, Michael. Always great talking to you. Talk to you in a week.
Thanks.
Jordan, we only watch what it's like from the outside. What's it like inside?
Yeah, it's about what it's probably like watching from the outside. I can't imagine that was fun for anyone to experience other than maybe Danny's team and those who are fans of him. It was at one point I told Mike, I said, you know, buddy, it seems like we're collapsing. And, you know, I wanted to be brutally honest with the way I felt towards him so that he could then respond with what is necessary to get us to rebound, and he did. Big picture, this one will hurt. It'll take a while.
It's just been a crazy ride. And again, there's two people obviously can't be here, my wife Nicole and my little man Zach. I hope they're back home watching, not gone to bed just yet. People were saying, you know, try and bring the green jacket home for little man. I think it's a little bit big, but I'm sure in a few years' time I'll grow into it. So, again, just a massive thank you to everyone here. Jordan being a fantastic, fantastic champion. You know, I feel very fortunate, you know, to be stood here and you not putting the jacket on yourself again. So, again, fantastic week. And, you know, I really appreciate everyone being out and everyone staying and showing their appreciation, you know, for this great golf tournament. Thank you.
And I hope you enjoyed our coverage on TSN Radio, TSN Television, and, of course, CTV. James Duthie. You know what Duthie did today? He played Augusta.
Oh.
Unlike Ray Ferraro, he played Augusta.
Melnick in the Afternoon is presented by Subaru. This ain't